morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Friday, June 24th. Here are some of the stories we are covering this morning. In South Africa, a spokesman for the Jacob Zuma Foundation says a damning report on corruption in the administration of the former president is hogwash.
The report is far more than a record of widespread corruption, fraud, and abuse. It is also an instrument through which the country can work to ensure that such events never ever happen again.
A spokesman for Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, says members are pleased with President Samia Suluhu Hassan's efforts towards national reconciliation.
After Freeman Mbowe was released from the prison, he went to visit the president. They agreed to form a reconciliation committee between Chadema and the ruling party. And among other issues we discussed was about the constitutional reform.
And services at Zimbabwe's biggest government hospital, as well as other major health centers, are paralyzed by a strike by health workers that began on Monday. Those stories and more coming up here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. South Africa's Chief Justice Raymond Zondo has released a final and damning report after a long-running inquiry into influence peddling and corruption during former President Jacob Zuma's 9 years in office. It recommends several high-ranking officials face investigation and prosecution. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Acting Chief Justice Raymond Zondo late Wednesday gave the final report on the plunder of state resources under former President Jacob Zuma to his former deputy and successor, President Cyril Ramaphosa. The latest installment of the five-part report focused on alleged wrongdoing by the state security agency and at the public broadcaster and other state-owned enterprises. It said Zuma's former spy chief should be prosecuted for graft and targeting the president's foes. It also found that Zuma's son, Duduzane, acted as a conduit between the wealthy Gupta family, business friends of Zuma's whose influence over the president was said to amount to state capture. The report said Duduzane should also be investigated. Ramaphosa said the inquiry had presented evidence of abuse of power and praised the whistleblowers and journalists who helped uncover it.
State capture really was an assault on our democracy. It violated the rights of every man, woman, and child in this country.
Previous parts of the report recommended Zuma be further investigated with a view towards prosecution and that the Guptas and several ministers face prosecution. Two of the Gupta brothers were arrested in Dubai this month and are facing extradition to South Africa. The inquiry ran for almost 4 years, with South Africans watching the daily televised hearing shocked by repeated witness testimony on corruption at the highest levels of government. Chief Justice Zondo spoke of some of the challenges the commission had faced while probing the graft.
A few members of the legal team that I know went through situations when their security needed to be beefed up because of the work they did in the commission.
Ramaphosa said the inquiry was vital to ensuring the survival of South Africa's democracy.
The report is far more than a record of widespread corruption, fraud, and abuse. It is also an instrument through which the country can work to ensure that such events never ever happen again.
But the report was also critical of Ramaphosa as Zuma's deputy for failing to do more against state capture. It was also highly critical of the ruling African National Congress Party. Independent political analyst Ralph Matheka praised the inquiry for surviving political attempts to interfere with the process.
And the major finding actually here is that the ANC actually dropped the ball, the ANC-led government. The state capture inquiry speaks about major lapses in governance. President Jacob Zuma comes out as the chief suspect.
Zuma, who was forced to step down in 2018, is already facing trial on multiple counts of corruption in a separate case. He's denied all wrongdoing. Spokesman for the Jacob Zuma Foundation, Mazwaneli Jimmy Mayani, told VOA the report was, quote, a lot of hogwash. Ramaphosa has 4 months to make his recommendations to Parliament on what action must be taken. South Africans will be waiting to see what arrests and prosecutions might follow. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A spokesperson for Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, says its members are pleased with President Samia Suluhu Hassan's latest efforts at national reconciliation. The ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi, or CCM party, said this week that it's ready to work with the president to reform the country's constitution. John Marema is Chadema's Director of Political Communications and Foreign Affairs. He tells VOA's James Batty that Tanzanians need to move forward together as one nation after 6 years of rule by late President John Magufuli. Marema says Chadema believes that an independent electoral commission should be a truly independent body with its own budget and that its members should have tenure.
Let me give you a little background. After Freeman Mbowe was released from the prison, he went to visit the president and they agreed to form a reconciliation committee between Chadema and the ruling party. And among other issues we discussed was about the constitutional reform.
Your party has previously said that it would like an independent electoral commission and legal challenges to presidential election results. Do you still want these demands?
Yes, because if we are going to rewrite our constitution, and if we way back 2014, the proposed constitution by the Warioba Commission did provide those things to streamline the powers of the president, to have independent electoral commission, to have independent judicial system, independent parliament, and so many other issues. Our proposal is that we should go back to the draft constitution by the Warioba Commission of 2014. That's where we can start. So we need that because we need a president who sits as a president after winning the election and not a president who can sit just because he rigged the election.
What would an independent electoral commission look like to you?
For us, independent electoral commission have several features. First, they should have an independent budget as opposed to the right now. They operate under the Prime Minister's office. Second, they have to have the security of tenure in the office. If the commissioners are appointed by the president, and they can be sacked any time the president feels so. We need these people to operate freely without interference from the state, and the appointment authority should not be the president just picking anybody. The position should be announced, and the people with high morals, they can apply, and then we can have a screening process of getting them in. And once they are in, the security of tenure in the office should be provided by the Constitution.
You had also mentioned the right to challenge presidential election results. Why are these important to Chadema?
Our Constitution, Article 74, says that the Electoral Commission cannot be challenged in any court of law in this country. We need the presidential election result to be challenged so that if the election was mismanaged as what happened in 2020, we can be able to go to the court of law and challenge those results.
So it seems to me Chadema is pleased with the direction that President Samia is taking towards reform. Because previously you had expressed reservation, particularly following the arrest of your leader.
Yes, we are seeing that President Samia Suluhu Hassan is taking a positive move towards the reconciliation of the nation. And we need that so that we can move together as the one nation after 6 years of the bullying of the late former President John Pombe Magufuli.
Thank you so much again, Mr. Marema. It's very nice to talk to you.
You're welcome, James.
John Marema is Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs for Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. He was speaking from Dar es Salaam with VOA's James Batty. Services at Zimbabwe's biggest government hospital, as well as other major health centers across the country, are paralyzed by strike by health workers that began on Monday. Reporter Kuzai Msengi brings us more from Bulawayo.
Police Wednesday blocked hundreds of health workers from marching around Zimbabwe's Parenyatra group of hospitals, the biggest hospital in the country. Despite the police action, junior doctors, nurses and other health professionals remained gathered outside the hospital for over 3 hours until they dispersed around lunchtime. The situation was the same at other government hospitals in the capital, including Harare Central and Chitungwiza Hospital in the satellite town of Chitungwiza, with most workers not reporting for work. Enoch Dongo is the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, one of the nurses' representative organizations. He said the workers will not relent until their concerns are addressed.
Patients, clients are stranded in the hospitals. They cannot get any services that they require. And this is an urgent matter. We are going to lose a lot of people who are supposed to survive. And we are putting all the blame to our employer, Health Service Board.
At Mpilo Hospital, the country's second biggest, located in Bulawayo, and across town at the United Bulawayo Hospitals, there was a skeletal staff as most health professionals stayed away from work. Anthony Majongosi is the provincial chairperson of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association. He said the health professionals can no longer afford to come to work because of poor salaries, which have been eroded by rising inflation.
Yesterday here in Bulawayo, as nurses and other health workers like doctors, pharmacists and all, we gathered at our central hospital to show our displeasure with our employer, which is the government, that we need them to pay us enough salaries so that we can be capacitated. Right now, we are not able to go to work every day.
Ahead of the strike, the Health Apex Council, which includes representatives of health professionals, issued a statement with a list of grievances, including the need for better working conditions and salaries. They also complain that neither the Health Ministry, headed by Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, nor the Health Services Board, which employs the professionals, has agreed to requests for meetings, saying such talks were last held 14 months back. VOA tried to contact the Health Services Board Chairperson, Dr. Paulina Skosana, for comment, but his mobile phone was not reachable. The government came up with a law which bars health professionals from striking for more than 2 consecutive days. Former health minister and physician Dr. Henry Madzorera is a member of the main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change. He told VOA that such a law will not help resolve the grievances of health professionals. Dr. Madzorera says the strike will worsen the situation in the country's delivery system, which is already reeling from an acute staff shortage, and said government needs to address the issue urgently. Zimbabwe's civil servants, including health professionals and teachers in particular, have been clamoring for salaries based on the US dollar as hyperinflation continues to erode incomes. Government scrapped US dollar salaries in 2018 before reintroducing the local currency, whose value continues to weaken. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
Norway's humanitarian organization, the Norwegian Refugee Council, says Somalia is facing a situation not seen in more than 40 years due to ongoing drought and unexpected fifth failed rain season. According to the Norwegian Refugee Council, more than 800,000 people have been forced to flee their homes due to drought since the start of last year in Somalia. In a statement Thursday, the organization said the number of people facing crisis hunger levels is also expected to rise from less than 5 million to more than 7 million in the coming months. The Norwegian Refugee Council Secretary General Ian Egeland has been visiting Somalia this week. On the line to Mogadishu on Thursday, Haruna Maruf of VOA's Somali service asked Ian Egeland about what he saw on the ground.
Tell me about your trip. When did you arrive in Somalia? Where did you go and what have you seen?
I came from Norway by Ethiopia to Mogadishu on Monday. I've been the last 2 days in Baidoa, in south-central Somalia, where I have seen horrendous drought and loss of lives. This is a climate-caused drought that is hurting the Somali people tremendously, and those who are dying are the innocent children.
What do we know about those who are dying and the cause of death?
Well, the cause of death really is hunger linked to drought, poor, failed rainy seasons means that the farmers have not had a harvest now for years. The pastoralists have lost their sheep, their goats, their camels. They have all died. So when I was there in Baidoa, I saw all of these families coming on foot, fleeing the most drought-stricken regions. They come to 550 informal settlements for the drought-stricken population, and some have severely, acutely malnourished children that are on the brink of dying.
And how many people would you say have died for hunger so far?
Well, it's very hard to say how many have already perished, but the number of people fleeing their drought-stricken areas is increasing. The number of children being accepted to, you know, the hospitals for the acutely malnourished is doubling every month, and children have died probably in the thousands, either directly from malnutrition or from the diseases that the malnourished get because they are too weak to sustain the normal diseases.
And tell me about the families you met who had children who are very severely malnourished.
Yeah, I mean, there are many stories that are heartbreaking. But let me tell you about Ibrahim. He was a father. He had gone 260 kilometers to Baidoa, only with the help of a skinny little donkey. Reaching Baidoa, he told that his daughter, Saldado, was dying from various diseases, and fortunately, he got help at the hospital. I saw the little girl, beautiful little girl. She was 3 years old, but she weighed 6.4 kilos. Which is less than my 3 months old grandson in Norway. And the little girl had one disease on top of the other because she was malnourished. And Ibrahim said, I am so worried for my daughter, but I'm also worried for my 7 other children who are behind in our drought-stricken village with my wife. Who will help us? Is there any relief for us?
And, of course, the drought has affected a lot of regions, but also with drought comes a lack of access to water. Tell me about the survey that your organization have conducted.
Well, we have done a survey now where we were able to communicate with thousands of people through, you know, family heads of households. And two-thirds have now had their lives devastated, cannot afford food anymore. Remember that Somalia gets 90% of its wheat, its grain, from Ukraine and Russia, and that is blocked by the war in Europe. The people we surveyed said that they are now skipping meals, they cannot afford to buy food, and they have no food production because of the drought that now has been caused by 4 failed rainy seasons.
So Somalia had famines in 1992, in 2011, in 2017, and now we are in a similar situation. How far is Somalia from the situation we have had in those previous years?
It is true that the droughts and the possible famines come again and again to Somalia, which means we need to make societies resilient, and Somalis need to work hard to make themselves more robust to the droughts. But what I'm fearing now is that 2022 will be more like the horrendous, horrific drought of 20 2012-13, when more than a quarter of a million people died, it will not be, it seems, unfortunate, like in 2017, when the whole international community mobilized, and we were, including the Norwegian Refugee Council, able to avert famine because of a massive relief operation. That relief operation is still not there. We're lacking the funding that we had at that time.
And final question, what's being done on the ground in response to this drought, and what's not being done at this time?
Well, many aid groups on the ground, including the Norwegian Refugee Council that has been here in Somalia since 2006, we're doing all we can with the resources we can. So, indeed, millions are getting relief, but even more millions are lacking relief. So what we're appealing for is a massive scale-up in the funding.
That was Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Ian Egeland, speaking with Haroon Maruf for VOA's Somali Service. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and for that, let's go to Abuja for Samson O'Malley. Good morning, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Douglas. We begin the sport in Nigeria, where President Muhammadu Buhari has rescinded his decision to suspend Nigeria's basketball teams from all international competitions. The permanent secretary in the Ministry of Youth and Sports Development, Ismaila Abubakar, disclosed this at a news conference in Abuja on Thursday. He said the latest decision is based on a letter of appeal from the Nigerian Basketball Federation signed by the federation's embattled president, Musa Kida.
In the overall overriding spirit of national interest, love for youth, for our youths, and in order to avoid sending basketball development into a long period of suspension, when NBBF have now committed to resolution of the issues which precipitated the withdrawal in the first place, has approved the return of Nigeria to international basketball immediately.
Before the reversal of the ban, FIBA had replaced the Tigres with Mali ahead of the FIBA Women's World Cup to be held later in the year. Staying with basketball news, Rwanda will host the 2023 Women's AfroBasket Tournament. The Women's AfroBasket Tournament is a continental championship contested by the women's national teams of Africa, held once every 2 years under the auspices of the International Basketball Federation, FIBA. The competition brings together 12 teams from different African countries to compete. And now to tennis. Tunisian star Ons Jabeur and Serena Williams have pulled out of their Eastbourne International doubles semi-final due to an injury concern just days before Wimbledon begins. Organizers of the Eastbourne International Tournament said Tunisian world number 3 singles star Jabeur was troubled by a right knee injury, forcing her brief alliance with Williams to come to an end. They had won through 2 rounds in increasing impressive style, with Williams making her return to the WTA Tour, having not played competitive tennis since injuring an ankle at Wimbledon last year. After their quarterfinals match, Tunisian Jabeur said it was a great feeling playing alongside Serena.
No, it's really great. I think we played really good, and I'm happy that I didn't know we were in the semi-final. It's super fast, but it's great for us, yeah.
And now to football news. Reigning African champions Senegal are ranked first in Africa and 18th in the world with 1,593 points in the latest rankings released by the football governing body FIFA on Thursday. Morocco's Atlas Lions, who will be participating in the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar, moved to 22nd globally and 2nd in Africa after accruing 1,558 points. Another North African country, Tunisia, is third, while the Super Eagles of Nigeria now occupies the fourth spot as AFCON 2021 host Cameroon, top 5 sports on the continent, at the fifth position. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Douglas, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com and connect with us on social media platforms like Twitter and Instagram. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.